Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed out up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. That's all there is to it. You're just stuck with me. We're going to talk about cars. And if you'd like to join us, now's the time. Trust me, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. There's hardly a week that goes by that I don't get a call from a happy customer about Quality Transmission. They tell me how knowledgeable Bob and Steve and his staff are, how much money they saved, and how happy they are that I recommended them to try Quality Transmission. In addition to repairing transmissions, they also do clutch repairs, drive lines, drive axles, CV boot replacements. They're located on McClintock, north of University in Tempe. And Dave Valentine from Arizona Auto Repair over on Stapley and McKellips just west is sitting next to me. He's my co-pilot today. Dave, good morning, buddy.
Good morning, Mark. Nice to be here again, buddy.
Don't you use Quality?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I like them.
Do you know he's a Vietnam vet?
I do.
Yeah, and he flew jets and all that kind of stuff?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, he has a video. For any of you Vietnam veterans that were over there and you actually were participating in the airplanes in the sky, he has video that he took from his airplane shooting rockets and all that kind of stuff. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, that
would really, really interesting. Yeah. And you can hear him in the background using all that radio jargon and all that kind of stuff. So it's you're actually there during the war. But I think he served more than one term, but he was lucky.
Yeah, he's got a lot of war stories. I know that when I get down there, I always know that he's a war vet.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I that's what I enjoy. I'm perfectly happy to sit next to him and have him tell me about, well, I remember this time. And then you can always key him up till you can say, well, how close did you come to getting shot down? And did you ever see anybody get shot down? And all you got to do is ask those kinds of questions, and then he'll tell you a story. But you know, he tells you the truth. Even the stories he tells me, I could flower up a tad, but he doesn't do that.
Well, his manager said they actually get more interesting the more times he tells it.
Oh, well, then he is flowering them up then. He is flowering them up. 602-508-0960. Right around the corner, summertime, people are going to start getting ready. We're telling folks that if you're in the 60, 70, 80 mark, you might look at hoses and belts, and if not this summer, certainly before next summer. What are you seeing a lot of right now?
Water pumps coming in. Cool. Actually, a lot of timing belts.
Okay.
And on these newer cars, water pumps behind the timing belt a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in there, you could actually do both of them, save the guy the labor to do it twice.
Yeah. That's really hard to explain sometimes. So we have a 10-step process to the water pump. Let's pretend that, okay? So the first one, we're going to pull the shroud. Second one, we're going to pull the fan. Whatever, whatever. So we're going to go in, and the water pump is the step 10, and the timing belt is step 9.
Correct.
Now, you probably talk to your customers, like the rest of us do, and you say, I'm going in to get water pump, and I got to take the timing belt off. The only difference, if I do your timing belt, is the cost of the belt, because you've already paid the labor to get there and remove it.
Right.
And sometimes that's an easy sell, and sometimes it isn't. And it's hard to explain, I guess, that otherwise you're going to pay twice.
Well, actually, I find it easier to sell the timing belt and then harder to sell the water pump because I have to go a little farther, like you said, step 10.
Yeah. And step 10 can cost another 20, 30, 40, 50. It just depends on the time to unbolt it and scrape the gasket and all that kind of stuff. But you're right. You're right. The T-belt typically isn't as much as the water pump, so that's kind of a big step to go to the water pump. But then again, it's kind of like 60,000. I tell folks 60,000 miles is twice around the girth of the Earth, twice around the equator. That's a whole lot of shifting. That's a whole lot of stopping and going. And if your car had fins, that's twice around the world. Yeah. So that's, I mean, we lose track of that. Because in the 70s, 60,000 miles was, it's time to get rid of that old dog because it needs a valve job.
I have a customer's car in there right now that was towed in that did not change the timing belt, Honda, interference engine, and she's just about destroyed the engine. So that's to tell you that maintenance is important. And even if it is $600 to $800 job, which seems a lot, compared to a $3,000, $4,000 engine job, it's very little.
Yeah. Now, what we mean by interference is this, folks. The piston, as it goes up and down in the can that it lives in, okay? So think of it as a caulk gun kind of an effect, okay? We got the plunger in the center, and this piston's going up and down. Now, the valves open and close in complete synchronization, and the valves are never open when the piston is going up.
Right.
And they close before the piston gets all the way to the top. Here's what happens on an interference motor. The valves stop working, and no matter how it stops, no matter where it stops, there's going to be valves open in one of the four, one of the six, one of the eight cylinders. There's going to be valves open. As that piston continues to go up and down, because it's attached to the front or the rear wheels, the piston's going to hit and bend the valves. And then you've got big-time problems. Now, let me ask you this hard question, because there's no right or wrong answer. What percentage of the cars out there are interference motors that are going to suffer damage, almost sure?
I'm finding that a lot of the foreign cars have more problems with it than the domestic, although now domestics follow the foreign Asian market and all. It just depends. When we look them up, it'll tell you right away, interference or not.
Yeah.
And that's the key, because then we'll sell the timing belt before they have that problem.
Right.
You want to do the maintenance. That's the critical part.
You could go on Google and type in, 2004 Honda 2.4 liter interference. And if you type that into Google, you could find something that says, yes, your motor is, or yes, your motor isn't.
Right.
The interference motor is the one that's going to cost you 3-4 times normal if you don't change it before it breaks. The rest of the motors will breeze right through a broken timing belt, except for a tow bill. They're fine.
Yep.
All righty, who we got on the phone? Jeremy?
We got Harold up next.
Harold, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. A couple of times in the past, you have discussed these devices that periodically come on the market that are supposed to help you with your fuel economy.
Yes.
And I think your basic conclusion was that you've looked at some of these devices, and none of them proved to be worthwhile. Is that correct?
Let me clarify that. I've looked at the principle of all of these gizmos, and the principle is defective. It's not defective to the maker of the because he's going to take your money, so it's a real win for him. But there's no way the principle of these devices is going to benefit you as a driver.
Okay, now what prompted this call, Mark, is I got one of these magazines in the mail, the mail order type magazine.
Uh-huh.
And there is a device advertised called the Fuel Doctor Platinum.
Yep.
Have you heard of this?
Yep. You know what that is?
Well, according to this, it plugs into your cigarette lighter outlet.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And it's it supposedly helps you electrically.
Yep. And here's how it works, okay? Now, I'm going to test your science ability on this one.
Okay.
All right. When fuel is injected into the engine, what portion of that area is ground and what portion is positive? Otherwise, I think you'll go along. I'm going to spot you the answer to this one. The ground is the engine, the cylinder walls.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, if let's pretend that the fuel molecules are positive. Once those fuel molecules are sprayed into the engine, and if they're positive, where are they going to go at the blink of an eye?
Towards the wall.
Exactly.
The
you got it. You know what? You're one of the first ones that's ever got this. Okay, now we got all the fuel against the wall, and we don't have any of the fuel in the middle of the cylinder. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this little thing in the fuel line, and I'm going to hook electricity up to it. And inside there is all these 7 to 9 different metals that look like lifesavers. Because if you cut them open. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to change the molecular structure of the fuel to where it's negative. That way, all the fuel molecules are dead center in the cylinder. And it's going to give you a lot more power and a lot more fuel economy. Now, that is a good deal, right?
Yes, I just have trouble believing it works the way they describe it.
Of course it doesn't work. First of all, everybody will tell you, you can't change the molecular structure with respect to a magnet of water or anything else. There's magnets have to do with metal, and fuel's not metal.
Yeah.
And there's no science that says that they're capable of changing the molecular structure to change the fuel from a positive to a negative. But it sounds good, and when you look at the words change the molecular structure, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
But I you've heard me offer my $29.95, right?
Well, I looked at this thing. They want $36 for it. You plug it into your cigarette lighter, mm-hmm. and supposedly it has been certified by the EPA. I mean, these are the kind of words they use.
Well, here's how they certify it. EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency that has to do with what comes out of the tailpipe and the gas tank of your car, the vehicle emissions.
Yes.
2 minutes.
By certifying this, they're not certifying it. They've submitted it to EPA, and EPA says this has nothing to do with vehicle emissions. And so they call that a certification. But the fact of the matter is EPA tests it and says, you know what? This doesn't change the molecular structure. This doesn't have anything to do with that. It doesn't change the explosion, the gas, the air-fuel mixture. What comes out of the tailpipe on a car is the same as before we put this gizmo in, so therefore it's not harmful to your car.
Is it also possible, Mark, that this thing could void your warranty?
No. No, because they'd have to prove it.
Okay.
They'd have to prove it. Hey, speaking of warranty, Dave, are you still working with aftermarket warranties as much as all the rest of us?
Yes.
Are they giving you a bad time this time of the year?
Warranties always do, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The answer to your question on warranties is real simple. They have to somehow prove that the alternator failure, the water pump failure, the transmission failure, the engine failure has to do with this thing you've plugged in.
Okay.
Okay, and that's not going to happen. But when we come back, Dave and I are going to continue to talk. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you have any kind of question, and air conditioning is right around the corner if you want to talk about that. And we'll also talk about refrigerants and what you should and shouldn't do. But, Dave, when we talk about aftermarket warranty, my next question's next break is, do they send you parts or do they want to send you parts? And if you get those parts, are they worth a darn? Are they premium? Or have you ever heard of the name? Those kinds of questions. And what have they asked for that the customer can't provide where they can say warranty voided? So when we get back, we'll talk about that. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. This is The Patriot, KKNT, right here on 960 AM, and we're going to be here up until noon. So if you'd like to join us, call us then.
Immigration reform legislation.
My name is Mark Salem. My co-pilot is Dave Valentine from Arizona Auto Repair up at Stapley and McKellips, just west, right next to the Sonic. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by someone else on kind of the west side of Mesa. That's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Family owned and operated, providing good car care, quality car care in Mesa since 1970. Brian and Thelma are equipped to handle any major, minor, foreign, domestic, big cars, small cars, whatever. They understand your vehicle is a major investment, and they will care for your car just as if they care for their own mothers and fathers. Visit Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley. We're going to go to the phones real quick, but real quick, does the aftermarket warranty companies want to send you parts?
Yes, they want to do everything for you.
Okay. And then when they send you parts, are they quality parts, or have you ever heard of them before?
Not really. Usually they want to send you the cheapest thing because they have the dollar in mind. That's
right.
All they care about. And I personally don't even warranty my own vehicles for that reason.
So you don't buy them?
No, I won't buy them.
And I don't either.
No.
And we'll talk more about that. But Don, you're up first. Don, how can I help you today?
Well, I got a couple issues. One, I got a 99 Dodge Durango. 180,000 miles.
Okay.
And at startup, it doesn't want to maintain idle. It'll crank, everything fires, and then it'll just whoop, and die.
Okay.
So in order for me to get it started sometime, it's intermittent, I'll depress the accelerator and hold the RPMs up around 1,500 or so, and it'll sit there and idle until it gets sufficiently warmed up, then it'll maintain idle. And I'll
okay. The way to talk, when you take your car into the repair shop, you're going to say, only on cold, it starts and dies, but if I give it throttle, it'll run. Okay, Dave, fix it.
Does it crank when it's cold?
No, it fires right up.
Does fire up and then dies.
And then it promptly dies. Yeah, it just loses it. It's like it loses idle control or fuel. Something's not getting there, obviously.
All right, are you getting a check engine light?
Nope.
Idle air control motor, is that what you're thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so my 180,000 miles.
That's a lot of miles.
Yeah. How we control the idle on a fuel-injected vehicle is actually we add or subtract air.
Okay.
And there's this motor with a cone on the end of the shaft, and it closes on a hole or it opens on a hole. It's called the idle air control motor. Go to the parts store and ask them to pull an idle air control motor for your 99 Durango. Once you see what it looks like, you'll know where it's at. It's up near the throttle blades.
Okay.
And then you're going to disconnect your battery. You're going to take it out, and you're going to clean that whole orifice up. You're going to clean up the idle air control motor. And if that changes things, you're home free. If it changes it for the worst, you're still on the right track. Changes it with the better, you're home free. But if it changes it for the worst and it gets worse than it was, then you probably replace the idle air control motor. And what Dave was thinking there was is that's not necessarily going to set a code. So we were looking at some of the fuel and ignition kind of sections, and without the check engine light, then you have to go to something that the computer doesn't watch.
So it's called idle or air control motor?
Idle air control, for short, the acronym is IAC motor.
Never heard of such a thing.
If you want to sound intelligent, when you go in, ask them for an IAC part.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to look at you like, what?
And they're going to say, do you want a two-person kayak or a one-person?
That's exactly right. What was your second question, buddy?
Second one, my AC. When I turn on my AC at low fan, I get mist or condensation coming out. If I crank it up, it blows so hard that presumably I don't see it. But
okay. And let me ask you a preference question. Are you adding any coolant to the overflow at all?
On the radiator?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Dave, you want to give him the bad news?
Yeah. Reach up underneath your dash and the carpet, you know, where you put your feet when you stretch out real long.
Yep.
Put your hand up in there. If your carpet's damp or wet, I hate to tell you, you got a heater core that's starting to leak.
I kind of thought that might be something to do with the heater box or heater core because my heater doesn't work very efficiently.
Are you getting like a condensation on your window at any time?
No, not too much.
The mist will come out of the vents. If you go to defrost right off the bat, it'll blow that mist up on the inside of your or your windshield, and it'll have kind of an oily film to it.
Ah.
Yeah, lower part of your windshield, right above the dash.
Is that accessible without too much motor movement or dash movement?
How bad is that
going to hurt?
The whole dash comes out, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? That's a big one. But let me just tell you this. Summer's right here, right?
Yep.
Okay. You know the two heater hoses that go to the firewall?
Yep.
If you were to take those off the heater core and just loop them with a little 3/4 half-inch splice, it wouldn't do that anymore, and you don't have to fix it till next November.
Hey, I don't even have to fix it next November. I've lived in Arizona my whole life, and I don't really need the heat anyway.
And you know something? The other day, Dave and Don, an elderly lady was told by a service manager of a very large auto repair shop that there was nothing they could do for her Crown Victoria other than her spend $700 for a heater core and the labor. So she called me, and I couldn't believe my eyes. I mean, I couldn't. So I said, just bring your car over here. And I looked at it, and I said to Louie, bypass the heater core. And I said, it's done. You don't have a heater anymore, but I told you wouldn't have me. She says, I'm okay. But I was really surprised. It's what kind of an idiot must you be in the industry to take advantage of a lady who's probably in her early 80s.
Well, it's a scare tactic is what
exactly.
It is. Yeah, you can't drive it without it. And then the poor lady doesn't understand anything other than that, and she believes him and spent a bunch of money that she really didn't have to.
And I look at it this way. He sold his integrity for $700 for the benefit of maybe $700. What he did is lose the customer forever. Yeah. We didn't even charge her. I felt so bad for her. We didn't even charge her. Yeah. So that's the answer, Don. If you don't care about the heater, loop those two heater hoses, and you'll be done.
Where's your shop, Dave? I live in East Mesa, so you sound like maybe a shop I might want to start attending.
625 East McKellips, which is west of Stapley on the McKellips Road south side of McKellop's, right beside the Sonic Hamburger.
I know exactly where that Sonic Hamburger is. So
okay.
When you go in, next time I need help.
Thank you, Don.
And Don, when you go in, just get on the computer and just print out like a 50% discount and then sign Mark Salem on it. And that'll be a good way to open up.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, buddy. All right. When we get back, we don't have enough time for Chris and Al, but I promise you, if you'll stay there, you'll be first on my list. First on my list. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto. I'm doing the advertisement now so you guys can be first on my list. Kurtz Auto, you'd be hard-pressed to find the level of expertise in their auto technicians and what's between their ears and what they can provide. Kurtz has years of experience working on both domestic and import vehicles, gas and diesel as well. Their goal is to offer the best services. Their goal is to diagnose it right, fix it right, and when you drive down the road, the problem's gone. Kurtz Auto is located at I-17 in Bell, just east.
One minute.
If you live in that area at Kurtz Auto Repair, give them a try, and you'll understand why I recommend them. Dave. The idea, Dave, is that you when you sell your integrity like that, and that's going on a lot right now because of the economy. There's lots of guys out there with right. one or two or three or four cars, some intermittently during the day, and they're having to sell. I saw an estimate the other day. There was three of them. I blindly bid it. One shop was at $1,600. I was at $1,200, and the guy did it for $900. And the lady was fit to be tied. And she filed a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. They don't really deal with pricing issues, but it was ugly as ugly could be. Okay, Dave Valentine, Arizona Auto Repair, Mark Salem, KKNT, and Kurt and Al, Chris and Al, you stay right there. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And just because I did that spot last break, Chris, just like I said, you're next, buddy. What can I do for you?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I'm looking at purchasing a vehicle that's been sitting for roughly 3 years, and it's near Southern and Greenfield.
Okay.
I'm looking for a referral to take it to get an inspection done.
Okay. Are you going to be able to buy this really, really cheap?
Couple grand below the blue book.
Okay. All right. Here's the problem, and Dave, we can talk about this together. The problem with the inspection on a car that's been sitting 3 years is that most of what's going to go wrong isn't going to be there when we inspect it. It's going to be there 30 days after somebody puts it back on the road. So all the oil leaks, the coolant leaks, the oil consumption problems, whatever it is not going to be available. Now,
first of all, you're going to have to deal with the gas issue.
Yeah.
You've got a tank that's probably been sitting with gas in it for a long, long time, which will definitely be varnished. The tank really should come off, be flushed out real well. I'll tell you what happens if you don't do it that way. You can fill it with gas. It'll wash some of that varnish in there, and I've literally seen it seize an engine. The engine locked up solid on a 4.9-liter straight-six Ford. Same exact situation was what we're talking about here. But you're going to have to deal with the fuel issue right away. And then, like Mark's saying, then you're going to have issues come up like belts, hoses, that aren't going to show up until you drive for a while, and then they'll break, or you'll get a pinhole in something. Your water pump very well could leak. Transmission, you don't know about that if it's on an automatic particularly.
Yeah.
Just a lot of issues have come up.
And one of the things that you might want to do, this is a possibility, is you talk them into letting you put a 30-day plate on it that you can get on the internet.
Right.
Then you have somebody, just to start with, because you don't want to spend a bunch of money on this. I agree that the tank needs to come off, but just to start with, suck all the old fuel out, put a new fuel filter in, and put 10 gallons of fuel in it. Change the oil and filter, get it running. That's all you're interested in, is get it running. Even if you have to carry a separate battery and a set of jumper cables, just get
it
running.
It does run. He claims he drives it at least once a month around the block.
Okay, well, that's the worst thing that you can do for it. But
yeah.
if that's the case, then just ask him. Say, let me rent it from you for a month for $100 or something. I'll put insurance on it for a month. But it really needs to be on the road, because only then can you really get the complete list.
Okay.
But because it runs, what's your used car checkover cost?
Honestly, we just check them for free.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you go to Dave's, belts, hoses, fluids, tires, maybe sticking a tailpipe probe in it to see how well we're running up in the front end, and looking for the obvious stuff that you know he's going to, and then giving him a timetable, right?
Right.
So this has to happen now, but this can wait till the beginning of next summer or something like that. So free is the best you're going to get, because it's not free at my shop. But that's,
I hear you.
Dave Valentine is at Arizona Auto Repair, Stapley, just west of McKellips. Actually west of Stapley on McKellips, right by the Sonic. So it'd be a good, and if you talk him into letting you take it in for an inspection, get your 3-day plate, put it on, drive it over there, and then drive it back and negotiate whatever deal you have.
Okay.
All righty.
Sounds great. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And Al, you're up next. Al, how can I help you?
An issue with a sunroof.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Got an 07 Suzuki XL7. And we rarely use the sunroof. But anyway, what's happened is the sunroof opens fine.
Okay.
And it goes to the closed position fine, except it won't raise that last quarter inch up to seal.
Okay. You want to deal with a sunroof?
I had one. This is a long time ago. We don't do a lot with those. And I know that they have like a, it was a cable in there that ran it. And the cable had like a spring type thing or the housing wrapped around it. And I know that it got jammed up with that housing. And the guy ended up literally replacing the whole sunroof.
Now, I'm with Dave, because we shy away from those. But here's what I think you need to do. Are you capable of being a tad devious?
Yeah.
Okay. So you call a couple of dealerships, and you say, I bought a car from you guys, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and you guys had a moonroof or a sunroof put in it. I want to have some repairs, and I know it's out of warranty. Who was that person? And they will tell you who their vendor is. So you're going to call 3 or 4 of them, and you're going to pretend like you bought it from them, and they're going to tell you who their vendor is. Then you go to the vendor. The vendor has the best chance of either fixing what you have or putting another one in. Dave's talking about a cable, so when the door closes, as the last inch closes, it pulls that flap down. The cable actually pulls the flap down. And he's talking about that. But none of us want to get into there, because sometimes you have to pull the headliner, and we're not capable of putting the headliner back in. You need an upholstery shop to do that. So there's some real pros and cons about that. Most mechanical shops won't touch that, but really, and body shops. Call around to some body shops, because they pass it to the vendors as well. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this.
Dinner nights, I can be found in the bed of my truck on an old Chase lounge. Backed into my spot at the drive-in show. You know, a cargo light gives off a romantic glow. Never have to wait in line at the popcorn stand.
Welcome back, everybody. 12:44 minutes after the hour. 10 o'clock, we're here till noon. But Dave Valentine from Arizona Auto Repair is here. And Betty, you're next, and then Warren's after you. So go right ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a well-maintained 96 Lexus LS400.
Okay.
With about 98,000 miles on it.
Okay.
I've had trouble with the car go racing at it, you know, when I stop. And I took it in to the dealer a year ago, and found the idle speed control sticking.
Okay.
And they cleaned it. But I'm still having problems, and I read in the paper about 2 years ago they were having trouble with Lexus cars and not being able to stop, and the lawyer says that he thinks it was the electronic control, throttle control.
He's right.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Now, electronic control says this. Instead of having a cable, a rope, between your throttle and the motor, the throttle electronically in code talks to the computer, and then the computer in code talks to the idle on the motor. That's called throttle by wire, or throttle by no wire. So it's not wired. Let me ask you an important question, though. When they cleaned the idle air control motor, did that make it better, worse, or exactly the same?
I think it was maybe better for a little while, but... Okay. I drive it so infrequently. I mean, drive it so little.
Yeah.
that it's kind of hard for me to tell.
Okay.
But it does. If I were to stop at a traffic light and take my foot sometimes and take my foot off the brake, it would go across by itself.
Okay. All right. If it helped any at all, what are you thinking? You're shaking
your
head.
What I'm wondering is, you said that you don't drive it a real lot, right, Betty?
No.
Okay.
But almost every day, but not long distances.
Okay. Thought ran through my mind is that possibly you might want to have your throttle itself, the throttle plate, cleaned. You might have a lot of carbon buildup, and if that holds it open, it's doing the same thing as that electronic part that gives it, when you accelerate. Mm-hmm. So what it might be doing is sticking a little bit open, thinking that you're giving it gas when you're not.
Oh, uh-huh.
And you might have that cleaned as well.
Oh,
and
the
Dave is exactly right. There are two places that you should be concerned about. You properly described them cleaning the idle air control motor.
Yeah.
The second place Dave's suggesting is the throttle blades. Now, they're kind of next to one another, and they go hand in hand. I would have them clean the throttle blades. Do you have any grandkids here in town?
No.
Do you know any 16, 17-year-old boys?
No.
Dave and I will come over for $1.50 and maybe some cookies, and we'll take your car out, and we'll warm it up really good for you.
Cookies and milk.
Yeah, cookies. Because that's what you need to do. Somebody really needs to take the car out. And maybe you can do it on a Sunday morning. Go up to Anthem to the north, or go down to the Casa Grande outlet stores. Do something, but put the car on the road. Let's give it a good, good warm-up. And it wouldn't hurt a bit when you're on the ramp on the way on to get on the freeway. If there's no one in front of you, just throttle that thing hard to the floor, and when you get about 60 miles an hour, 65, then back off the throttle. But I think you clean the throttle blades first, and then if that changes it for the better, but it goes back to the worst, then I think you change the idle air control motor, because at 98,000, you've been around the world 4 times, and if you were my mom, I'd give you the same thing, right, Dave?
Yep.
Are you with me?
I would suggest that.
Yeah.
And that's
right
what, that was what?
You idle air control motor. Idle air control motor. That's what they cleaned the first time, and I think that because you said it got better a little bit, but then it went back to it. That's why I think that. And they did. You know something? I'm pretty impressed that they cleaned it for you. Because I can tell you 150.
Instead of replacing
exactly,
it. I know where you're going.
Exactly. Because they did something nice for you. Because it's not going to be cheap. It's going to be a couple $100s. But they did something nice for you. And they said, let's try this. But what they didn't say to you, Betty, is let us know if it's better, worse, or the same. But now that we know that it was better for a while, when now it's back to its old tricks, then the idle air control motor would be the next place that I would replace after I clean the throttle blades, and then I'd drive it for a couple of days, and then I'd go back and have them replace the idle air control motor. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Betty, thank you very much. And Warren, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. I'm Warren with House Talk.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Hey, which body shop in town is good for fixing cars, where they're actually honest?
Give me a part of town.
I'm in, around Scottsdale Road and Thunderbird.
Oh, way north. Okay. Well, Phoenix Body Works is just north of you there. He's at 19th Avenue and just a block north of Deer Valley.
Okay.
And I want to tell you something. He's really one of the best. He has equipment that very few people would spend the money for, and one time in 11 or 12 years, there was a lady that wasn't happy with the paint color, and after that car was inspected by 8 other entities, she finally said okay. But I mean, everybody else said the paint color is perfect. But I mean, there was all kinds of people involved. There was paint manufacturing reps, and the people we flew people in that basically we said, just look at this. That's all we want. We're not going to tell you who did the work. We're not going to tell you where they did the work. We just look at the car and tell us if you see any paint discrepancies. So she was nice, but he's a good guy. So Phoenix Body Works up north. If you tell him Mark Salem sent you, you get like a 50% discount, and he'll laugh when you say that because it's not true. But he's a good guy.
I also want to tell your listeners, there's reasons for people like Mark. I own Trades Unlimited. We have had quite a few vehicles over the years, and in one instance, a shop in town was taking care of our whole fleet, and it turns out that they charged us for several thousand dollars worth of work they never did.
Yeah. You know, that's the last 2 years have been really tough. I can't tell you, Warren, how many legal cases I have on my desk right now that involve... I'll give you a quick one on this one. A customer takes his car in, and it has a specific set of symptoms. They replace the air conditioning unit three or four times, the whole system three or four times. Then the next shop says the first shop didn't do a good job, and they replace the entire air conditioning system. And then the third shop replaced the $12 part.
It's just unbelievable.
So we got a big problem because shop number one is willing to pony up money back. Shop number two isn't. And, of course, shop number three didn't do anything wrong. They fixed it with a high-pressure switch. And so that does happen. It happens in plumbers and electricians, you know. But in car repair right now, it's especially bad because the economy's bad, and some of these guys have big expenses, fancy cars and nice houses, and they're having a tough time paying for them right now. So
yeah, it's in this case, they had said they had done the work, and they certainly cashed our checks, but they never actually had done anything.
You know, when that happens, I had a case the other day where they said they had reflashed the computer. And do you have somebody come out and
yes.
reflash yours, and you pay
yes.
them, right?
Right?
And they give you
right.
a receipt.
Mm-hmm.
So the other expert said, okay, we're going to try to trap this shop. If you really did reflash the software, show us the receipt,
yeah.
and by God, he had one.
Yeah.
And everybody didn't believe he did it, but he really did do mm-hmm. it. So thank you, Warren. Thank you very much, buddy.
You bet.
And Cynthia, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I have a 2005 Ford 500. It's got about 60,000 miles. And on occasion, when I've taken the key out of the ignition and then tried, you know, open the door, try to lock the doors, they keep unlocking.
Okay.
And I've found that if I close the door, put the key back in the ignition, restart it, put it in and out of gear, take the key out, try it again, then they'll lock.
Okay. We had this same problem the other day in our shop.
Really?
And I don't remember what the fix was.
I know that Fords have had ignition switch problems for years
right.
and years.
And okay, now tell her what she should do to the ignition switch, the key portion that where the key goes in, right?
Right.
Are you talking about
key
the
and tumbler?
Key and tumbler, or are yeah. you talking about ignition switch down below?
Key and tumbler.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on the key and tumbler, what should she do different each time to determine if that's it?
I don't know.
Firmly. I want her to be real soft-handed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I want her to be real soft with it.
Well, make sure it's in park first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she hasn't said anything about not starting or cranking.
Right.
So we
got to
think
right.
that park signal's
right.
there.
Right.
I'm thinking she goes real easy with it on and off and on and off. And then she says, okay, it's happened and happened again. Now I want you to be firm with it. I want you to grab a hold of it, and I want you to put it to the start position. And then when you shut it off, I want you to shut it off firmly and let us know if that makes a difference. Because that will be what it's all about. Now, if you'll email me at mark@marksalem.com, I will have Eddie respond to you because he looked that up just the other day. And I think he may have said that the master switch or the door switch, that if the door switch is lying about the door being opened or closed, then it won't lock the doors.
Right, right.
Now, you could, Cynthia, on that, if it's a door switch, here's what you do. You shut the door normally, and you see if it happens the next time you turn the key off. Then you do it normally, and then I want you to go into a 5 or 6 door slam. So I want you to slam that driver's door shut and then do your stuff and see if it happens. And if you say to the shop that when I slam the door hard, it's okay, then we know it's the door switch.
Okay.
So you can, if she were to walk into your shop and said to you, I got this lock and unlock intermittency, but when I slam the door hard, it works fine. How much diagnosis money did she just save herself?
I'd say probably about $65.
And I would have said 75 to 100, so we're in the ballpark.
Yeah.
75, okay. Depending on what shop
depending
it is.
Depending what we have to do, too.
Mm-hmm. So that's it, Cynthia. Just do what you got to do, but keep track
of... Yeah, because it's happened maybe a handful of times.
Okay.
And the rest of the time, it's fine.
Make sure that you get that door tight. That could be an issue, like Mark said. You've got to make sure the door is tight.
So just get in the habit of shutting it lightly and see if the problem exists again and again and again. And then if you can get it to happen 2, 3, 4 times, maybe not in a row, but 2, 3, 4 times in a week, then you start slamming the door real hard when you get in.
Okay.
And then if it doesn't go for like 2 weeks, then we already know. We got it knocked out.
You know, thank goodness for these new systems that when you don't get the door closed tight, they shut off electrically in about 10 minutes because there's a lot of these new cars that they're so tight. When you go to close the door, airtight inside, that the lights stay on.
Yeah. I got to tell you about my wife real quick. This is like really making me. She's complaining in my truck because she hears a wind noise in the passenger door. Okay? The truck has 93,000 miles on it. So Princess sits over there and she says, I hear wind, I hear wind. Okay, so I go in and I take the latch and I pull it in just a tad. I take a piece of paper and I slam the door in every piece all the way around the clock, and each time the paper comes out with tension, I know I got it. Last night, 3 times, she gets in and I say, shut your door again. Why? Because it says passenger door open. 3 times, and she says, what'd you do? And I says, I fixed the wind noise. Mm-hmm. She says, well, put it back in the middle.
1 minute.
I said, in the middle? She says, yeah, halfway between the wind noise and halfway between me having
halfway
to slam the door.
Halfway between the adjustment.
I says, you know what? It's cheaper for me to get a new girlfriend. That's what I'm going to do. Just get a new girlfriend. Okay, Harry,
can
you're going to...
Can I ask one more question?
I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
And because I'm up against a stop. And, Harry, don't you go anywhere because I'm going to get you right after we have Cynthia ask us one more question. And anybody else that would like to join us, here's the number because we have lines open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Dave Valentine from Arizona Auto Repair, west of Stapley on McKellops. So on McKellops, west of Stapley, south side of the road, right next door to Best of Sonic. You can't do wrong. If you live up in that area and you want somebody who will tell you when it's out of their league, Dave's the guy. But there's not too many of those that happen. The fact of the matter is he's going to treat you like family. He always has and always will. You can't find a nicer guy. If he wasn't married, this is exactly the kind of guy you'd want your daughter to bring home. But he's already married.
This was a paper.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real
so far it's
car
just
guy,
Cynthia and Harry
master
so far.
Technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and I'm your host for the next 1 hour. We're going to talk about cars. The lines are open. We have Cynthia and Harry, but if you want to get in, all you got to do is call us. 602-508-0960. If I sound like I'm out of breath, I am. I had to run downstairs and let Dave and his family out. And I knew I was going to be a tad late, but I guess I made it. 602-508-0960. Cynthia, you had one more question.
One more question.
I'm happy to help you.
Okay. Twice, I'd say in the last month or so, as I was making a right-hand turn, and I had the signal on, all of a sudden, the interior alarm started dinging, and it stopped as soon as the blinker turned off.
Okay.
Both times, the blinker was on for quite a while because I was waiting at a no-turn on red corner.
Okay. I've been there before, and the thing I want you to have somebody do, the very first thing that needs to be done on both of these problems, is someone needs to check every fuse you have.
Okay.
And here's why. The fuses, I'll give you an example. I had a Cadillac, and every time you open the door, the radio station would change. And I've never fixed that before, but the basic fundamentals say check the fuses first. So you take a test light. They cannot look at them and condemn them or say they're fine. They have to be tested where they live. So you have this little 12-volt ice pick with a light in the handle. And as you touch both sides of the fuses, the light lights up. So somebody tests all the fuses. That's what we did. And we found that the accessory fuse was blown. And when we put a new fuse in, it blew immediately. Well, the accessories is all the interior stuff. So we started looking at lights, trying to figure out which light may have caused it. And during the process, you always check the cigarette lighters. And in the back seat in the cigarette lighter right behind the driver was a penny, where one of the grandkids had put a penny. So you wet your finger, stick it in the lighter, because it's dead circuit anyway, besides 12 volts, it's not going to hurt you. You pull the penny out, you put the fuse in, boom, it's fine. Now, the radio station didn't change, and here's why. The radio was looking for a ground, and when that circuit went dead, that circuit would then interrupt the ground as the door opened and closed. And so as a result of that, the radio station would think that somebody turned it off and turned it on or hit the scan or seek button. So in your particular case, because it's so unusual, we're not going to work on the turn signal side of that. We're going to check all the fuses. If one of them's blown, then we're going to fix the fuse. And I think you have better than a 75% chance of a blown fuse causing this problem, and follow the fuse blown. Don't follow that turn signal thing. Okay?
Okay. Now, is this anything I need to worry about?
No.
Okay.
No, clearly what's going on here is the, I still think it's involved with the door switch.
Okay.
I still think that, and you have so many symptoms that my suggestion would be is focus on the door lock problem and focus on the fuses and forget about all the rest of them, because you're hoping that one repair fixes all of them.
Okay.
So let's go with the path that's most obvious. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay, good luck to you.
And the other thing is, the Mesa Republic, your column today, has the phone number is a 506 instead of a 508.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Thank you very much.
I don't, you know, I called twice. Well, I use my cell phone, and then I use my regular phone, and I get the same other company or something.
That's my wife's fault, because this morning I got up early and fed the horses. She got the newspaper before I did. I always check the column. I didn't check the column. She didn't catch that. Oh, she's in trouble.
No, I don't want that.
I'm just teasing you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All righty.
Thank you. Okay, Harry, you're up next, buddy. What can I do for you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Mark. My son has a 2007 Hyundai Santa Fe. And they're from out of state, and they just moved back here, and the check engine light came on, and they took it down to the dealer, and they were told that the code indicated that it was a, evidently they have two fuel sending units on this particular vehicle.
Okay.
And, of course, they're going to have to drop the tank and do all this. They got online and on the internet, and it seems to be a problem on the 2007. There's a lot of people that have the same problem between 70 and 80,000 miles, and they're like at 77,000. So my question is, is this covered under the emissions deal, 100,000 mile emissions thing that the federal standards have, or...
No, because it's going to affect the telemetry of the car, but it's not going to affect the tailpipe emissions.
Okay. Hyundai says they would repair it like over $400, and they're going to have to drop the tank obviously to do it. Do you suggest that the fuel pump be changed at that time too?
Well, you know, it's going to be free labor if you do it that way.
Right.
And hopefully what's going to happen is their intention is to go in there and replace one sending unit, and hopefully you're going to get the entire assembly with both sending units and the pump and kill all the birds with one stone. Now, here's a couple things you need to do. Number one, go to the National Traffic Highway Safety Administration and check Hyundai fuel gauge.
Okay, that was National Traffic...
It's called National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA.
NHTSA, okay.
Yeah, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, yeah. NHTSA, you're going to complain nicely, just nicely. And first of all, you start, I have this car, and my symptoms are this. They said it was the sending unit, that there's two in the car, and one of them's defective, and the repair is $400. I've noticed on the internet that the 07s, between, give or take 10,000 miles from 80,000, seem to have this problem. Sooner or later, if it truly is a problem, then they're going to end up making some refunds to people. And you are best served by having the Hyundai dealer do it, or making sure that if you have it done outside the dealership, that they don't charge any more than the dealership, which actually they probably are going to be cheaper anyway. But because you don't want to, if Hyundai goes out there and says, okay, we're going to refund $400, and Harry took it over to Joe Schmoes and he charged him $600, they're not going to give you $600.
Right.
So consider, you know, and then the last thing is if the sending unit is contaminated, the sending unit is a bunch of piano keys with a pointer like a record going across all the piano keys.
Right.
You might say, I'm going to drive it for a week, and you're going to get it as low as you can on gas and then have them fill it up with Chevron Techraline, which is in the premium brand. There is wind on the internet that will clean the piano keys. And people have said that has solved problems like that in other cars. So it would be worth a try. But just keep your records. Make sure they keep the records. But until somebody forces the hand of Hyundai, then nobody's going to do anything. But the more people that make a nice complaint. But if you, Harry, you're not the kind of guy, but don't rant and rave. And nobody should rant and rave, because they're not going to listen to you. They're going to think you're a lunatic. Okay.
Another thing, too, is... you know, we'll check the emission light on. They're going to, have to get new plates and everything because they're from out of state. They're not going to be able, of course, to pass emissions because of the check engine.
You're right. You're right. You're going to have to deal. But what is it, Harry? Is it 30 days once you move to Arizona? You have to change.
I'm not exactly sure. I know if you have a job here, which he does, and. They moved into a rental, but I'm not sure exactly,
if and ands
things that have to take place.
Well, I'm not going to tell her to break the law, at least not with this many people listening. But there's an old adage, an old cowboy adage about risk and reward.
Right.
And I would expect she'd be okay if she had a reasonable explanation. Another thing she could do is she could go through and fail, which gives her a piece of paper that gives her 30 days. And that might very well be appropriate for any law enforcement officer that stopped him. Obviously, there's good ones and bad ones, and Lord knows who's going to stop her, or if they're going to stop her, but most of them would understand that she's in that 30-day window, and they probably leave her alone.
Okay, you were saying on that Chevrolet with the Techraline in it, I know they have a fuel additive that you can buy and put in with your gas.
You could do that, too. You could treat it with that as well. All you want is one tank. Everybody says one tank does it, and if it doesn't do it after one tank, then it's not going to do it. So try it in that way.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You betcha, Harry. Lewis, we're going to get to you in just a minute, but I wanted to talk about Phoenix Body Works, because we did have somebody. We had Warren ask about a Phoenix or a body shop in the north. Phoenix Body Works is a great place. They serve North Phoenix, Anthem, and New River, and have for years and years and years. They have a equipment necessary to straighten up a frame or a unibody structure. They have the ability to put it within thousands of an inch of the way it was from the factory. Now, the hair on my head's 2.5 thousandths thick. A piece of paper might be 3 thousandths thick. That's how close they can get your car if the unibody or the frame has been bent. That's up, down, left, right, north, south, east, west. That's every direction. Not too many people have that kind of equipment. So when you get involved in an accident, then it's my suggestion, if the frame's bent or the unibody's bent, or if it has to be towed and it's not drivable, Phoenix Body Works would be a great place to go. I see these kinds of problems on cars when they come in after they come from a body shop and they need an alignment, and we're not even within a half a mile of where we need to be. That's kind of sad. That means somebody else is going to have to do it. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free, insurance company friendly. They know how to work with your insurance company. 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley. 19th Avenue, half a block north of Deer Valley. No matter where you're from, you could go to Phoenix Body Works, but they serve North Phoenix, Anthem, and New River. Okay, Lewis, I can't take you right now, but you stay right there. But we got open line, 602-508-0960, if you have any questions, car problems or anything. And just remember that when I was a youngster, my father called me Blizzard, because he said if If bull manure was snow, I'd be a walking blizzard. But I'm going to tell you the truth about cars. And you'll know when I'm stretching the truth. Believe me, when I get on my storytelling mode, usually I have to have a campfire close by and somebody strumming a guitar, and I can probably tell you stories. But I'm not going to do it on the radio show, so that's good. If you're too shy to get on the radio, may I suggest you call me or you email me, and that's easy enough. It's mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Our website, marksalem.com, has all the best repair shops in Phoenix. You don't have to come to me. You just go see them. So, we'll be right back. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
Michael Medved says the president's second term agenda doesn't sound anything like...
Raised up from under
Welcome
my
back, hood. Everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me till noon right here on 960 The Patriot, KKNT. We're talking about cars like we do every Saturday from 10 to noon. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmissions. Bob and Steve at Quality Transmission are great guys. They know what they're doing. They're not going to lie to you, and I'll tell you one thing they're not going to do. They're not going to take your transmission apart before they give you an estimate. That's because they know better. That's because that's what bad guys do. Quality Transmission is located on Tempe on McClintock North University. No matter where you live, they're worth the drive. Trust me. Lewis, you're up next. Thank you for holding as long as you did. How can I help you?
Thank you. I want to get my radiator drained and flushed. I was wondering, is it okay to just have it drained regular, or should I get it to one of those companies that has a machine that pressure does it with a pressure?
You know, there's two trains of thought. I'll give you both of them.
Yep.
There's lots of people that say that the turbulence and the air and the water and the force and the pressure, that helps it. I've always said that rinsing your mouth out with Listerine doesn't kill anything except your tongue.
Yes.
And I am not a believer of flushing in people's cars to the nth degree, because I think you're more likely to end up with a leak you didn't have before.
Uh-huh.
Now, if your coolant is brown, that's because it's got a bunch of rust in there, and I promise you that you're never going to get that out.
Uh-huh.
That's something that happens to a few cars every once in a while, and that doesn't mean because the coolant's brown that the coolant's not working. We have this little $10 tester that tells us it's fine.
Uh-huh.
But as far as I'm concerned, a drain, a good cold water flush of the radiator, the engine, and the heater core, and then a 50-50 mix of coolant and water put back in is all you really need to do.
Yeah.
That's all. That's my opinion.
It's all red in there, red or orange, and it never changes, never goes down. You know, okay. It's always the same.
That's good. And how many miles are on the car?
Oh, 56,000. It hasn't been drained in about maybe 30,000.
But that's 100,000-mile coolant.
Yes.
I think if you did it, when did you do it, 30,000?
Yes. That was a long time ago.
I know, but I think I'd go 75 on this one.
Okay.
I think I'd go 75 to 80, because I tell everybody, Lewis, that if you have 100,000-mile coolant, that I really want you to flush it somewhere between 70 and 80.
Sure.
So you're already, you know, you'll be in your second flush by 80,000.
Okay.
So you could go 70 on top of wherever you're at, which is 30, and you could go to 100,000 and be fine. Now, here's what I want you to do, though, Lewis. I want you to plan it so you can flush it at the beginning of a summer.
Okay.
All right? And then you're home free. And you should spend about $100, $125 for a good flush and good deck cool.
Okay. Now, one other question. I want to get one of those small refrigerators put in the car.
Uh-huh.
I think they have them that'll plug in. And I have a couple plug-in spots in the car. They're not lighters. Lighter place for cigarette lighter, but they're just plug-in. You think a car can stand that, those little plug-in?
Not with the key out and you driving and you letting it sit, because it will take the battery down pretty quick.
Oh.
I think what those are used for is Lewis and his wife or girlfriend, and preferably not both, decide to drive to Oklahoma, and during the drive, when the motor's running all the time and the alternator's charging all the time, those are appropriate.
Yes, that's what I'm going to drive to the east.
Okay.
Take then, about 5 days.
Now, is it a 12-volt refrigerator, or are you using an inverter and running a 120-volt refrigerator?
I don't know. I haven't found it yet.
Okay. If it's a 12-volt, it'll be just fine. Uh-huh. Even if it's an inverter, and they want you to put an inverter in there that you buy from Radio Shack that converts 12 volts to 120 volts, as long as your motor's running, that's fine. But when you're going to stop at the hotel, uh-huh. you might put a block of ice in it and shut off the inverter when you go inside for the night.
Or pull the plug out from the 12 volt?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Okay, Lewis, good luck to you. Thank you very much. Walkington, you're up next, buddy. What can I do for you?
I have a Mark 8 with 30,000 miles on it. Runs fine, starts all day long, but it's a little stubborn in the morning trying to get going. The starter.
Okay. And when it starts in the morning...
It just cranks, cranking too much in the, on a cold start.
Okay. Okay. Does it make any difference, or have you noticed if the tank is full or empty, that aggravates it?
Not really. I don't keep it that much full because I don't drive it that much, as you can see with 30,000 miles on a 95 car. But I don't really think, so far, I haven't noticed anything of that nature.
Okay. If you were my pop, I would say, Dad, take it into a repair shop and have them check the fuel pressure regulator.
That has been replaced and had no effect.
Okay. Then it's got to be the check valve at the back of the tank.
The check valve has been checked. Turn the key on first thing in the morning with the pressure gauge on it. The pressure jumps up immediately. Maybe not all that much, but it comes up, I think, around 20 pounds or so. And that, of course, indicates that the pump, you know, kicked in.
Well, what's the spec on the pump, though, Walkington? Have you got a throttle body or have you got port fuel injection?
It's port fuel.
20 is too low.
4.6 with a 4-cam engine.
Yeah, that's too low. 20 is too low.
What's that?
20 is too low.
I wondered about that. Once the engine starts, the pressure comes up more, of course, but... With just the key on, the pressure didn't come up much more than about 20 pounds or so.
Okay, what you need to do is you need to leave that pressure gauge on there, and you need to drive it for a day, do a couple of hot start-ups, and do a couple of cold start-ups, and whatever the highest number is when you're cruising down the road, not when you're stuffing your foot to the throttle, but when you're cruising down the road, if that number happens to be 42, and you're just cruising down the road, and then it jumps to 50 when you throttle up hard, the 42 number is the one I want. That 20 is way too low. Now, here's how you can prove it. You turn the key on in the morning, but you don't go to the crank mode and count to 5. Turn it off and do that 3 times. Don't crank the engine. Just turn the key on and let the fuel pump buzz. Now, what we're doing is we're repriming the system. And then on the 4th try, when you flip the key to the on position and she fires right up, marks right. It's a fuel pump. Now, you're 95.
Yeah.
So your car is almost, well, it's certainly 15 years old at least.
Sure.
15, 16, 17, 18, 18 years old. So I'm thinking that's way too long. But then again, you don't have any miles on it, which is 30. So I if the fuel pressure regulator's been checked, fine. I hope they checked it appropriately. I hope they put a gauge on it and they saw what the running specification was. They knew exactly what this pump's supposed to put out. They saw that, and then they pulled the vacuum line off of it, and the pressure went up dramatically. And then they smell the inside of the line, the rubber line that goes to the fuel pressure air, make sure there's no gas in it. And then they plugged it back in, and boom, it dropped right down to 41 or 42, which is where I'm guessing it needs to be. That's the way to check it. And then the tank in the back, the check valve in the back, you put a pressure gauge on in the morning, or at nighttime, and when you shut it off, you look and you mark the gauge.
And then you understand that gas tank is under the back seat with the dry shaft going through the middle of it.
Okay, all right.
And that I just wondered if the fuel pump's even accessible under the seat.
No. If it is, okay, but most of the time we have to drop them. It's no big deal. It's just 2 straps and a filler neck. It's no big deal.
Yeah, but the dry shaft goes through it.
Ah, 4 bolts. That's easy. On a 1 to 10 scale, that's a 3. But the idea is that if we pinch off the return line, and then in the morning it's got good pressure, and the next morning we don't pinch off the return line, and then we have no pressure in the morning, then the check valve and the pump is bad.
I had all the indications, but on the other hand, I understand that on a cold engine, the sensors tell it's a cold engine and enriches the mixture slightly.
Okay, and we're going to talk about this when we come right back. Stay there.
This is Bob Jones, owner of Quality Transmission Service in Tempe. over the...
Little monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Yes, sir, Henry Ford, one of the pioneers of the automobile. My name is Mark Salem. It's 1134. We're talking about cars and car repair. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Automotive. Larry Harker's has been in the Valley serving customers since 1967. The current owners, Bob and Ellen, have owned and operated Larry Harker since 1989, and their technicians have been with them for years and decades. They're a trusted source for quality auto repairs, affordable prices, and in the Phoenix area. They're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. So if you live between Camelback to the north and the I-10 to the south, the 17 to the east, and the 101 west side, then you are in Larry Harker's zone. He's the only one that's qualified on our list to serve that particular area, and we believe he's the best. That's Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Okay, Walkington, we had one more thought. Go right ahead with your last thought.
Well, to maybe further talk about this, we have found that by turn the key on and hesitate for a second or two, crank the engine for a second or two, and then get off, and then hit it again, and it usually starts instantly.
Well, that's the same thing I talked about. The only difference is when you're cranking the engine, we're going to kill the pump until you let go of the key, and I'm just suggesting that you turn it to the on position, and the fuel pump, the computer will run the fuel pump from 3 to 5 seconds, and unless it sees an RPM increase from 250 RPM upwards to 600, 700, or 800, then it's going to shut the pump off. So the longer you crank, you're not doing any good. So, more than anything else, Walkington, you need to find out what the pressure is supposed to be on your car.
Yeah, I was kind of figured on that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fuel pump problem, maybe.
Well, it can be 2 pounds. We've replaced fuel pumps that have been spec'd at 38, and they come in at 36, and the car won't run. We put 38 in them, and everything's fine. So it can be 2 pounds of difference. All righty.
That car runs so good, you know, when it does go. It's just hard to understand why it's stubborn and why it won't start in the morning.
Well, it's only two things. Like we discussed, it's either fuel pressure or at night when you park it, it's leaking back to the tank and you're starting with zero pressure in the morning and it's going to take you a while to build pressure. Now, if you check that pressure regulator right, then you could eliminate that and it would be the fuel pump and or the check valve back at the fuel pump. But I'd sure hate for you to spend a whole lot of money doing the fuel pump and find out that you didn't check the fuel pressure regulator right. But nevertheless, and if you need more conversation, I'm happy to help you at mark@marksalem.com. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can I help you today?
Hi, Mark. I was having my rear end serviced on my Chevy pickup.
Okay.
And they took the differential cover off, and I brought in Mobil 1 fluid. And I asked the shop owner if I could go look, you know, when they had the cover off, you know, to see what the gears looked like.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, no, you can't go in our shop, Barry.
You're going to go back?
He wouldn't let me go look at it.
Are you going to go back?
Am I going to go back to that shop?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't real happy because I just wanted to look at it.
I want to tell you something. I work in the industry, in the insurance industry. I've been in business 32 years, and I've never had a policy. I've never seen a policy that prevented my customers to not go into the shop. Now, some of them say that they want the customers to be escorted. Some of them say that they want the customers to sign off on something. But I've never seen one. And I'll tell you, I don't know if your shop was doing this or not, but there's a lot of people who represent that they're going to pull the cover off of the differential and clean everything up and put it back together. And in reality, once they get it back into the shop, we have suck machines. So they stick a little straw down in the filler hole and they suck all the fluid out. Nobody's looking at the gears. Nobody cares. And then they put new fluid in it and they send it out the door. But they charge you for R&R, the cover, remove and reinstall the cover. But really, this is what we call a suck and fill. And it's a whole lot cheaper than replacing the cover. If I were you, I wouldn't go back. Come on. Why wouldn't he want to be your hero? Why wouldn't he say, doggone it, Bob, that's a great idea. Come on out here and let's take a look at that. Bob, this is what the gear should look like. This is what the gear shouldn't look like. Bob, these teeth and that wear pattern is just perfect. And look down here, Bob. There is hardly any sediment, hardly any metal. And look at the magnet on the back of the cover. It hardly has any fuzz on it at all. So, Bob, you're in really good shape. Why wouldn't he want to do that?
1 minute.
Do you think that's inferior, that suck and fill, versus removing the cover?
I don't know. I got to tell you, I do it on my own. There's a time and a place for everything. I want to take the cover off the first time, but after that, I'm just going to do a suck and fill because all the metal is going to be generated in the first 10,000 miles of use. After that, we're going to have minimal amount of metal because everything's polished by then. Besides that, we've been pulling the cover for years, and we never had a differential fail because we didn't pull the cover. So the suck and fill is a quick, fast, easy way to do it at appropriate times. But I don't know. I'm just the hair on my back is standing up right now because flat out, that's BS. That shouldn't happen. He should be your hero. He should walk you out there, even if he has to stop everybody and say, "We're walking through. Everybody stop working." He was hiding something. There's no other excuse. He was hiding something. Good luck to you, Bob. And when we come back, Vicki, you stay right there. We'll be back. We'll be back in just a minute.
There's a big...
Most Friday nights, I can be found in the bed of my truck on an old Chase Lounge. Backed into my spot.
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got open lines available. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I want to tell you something that really shows about Dave, who was my first hour guest. Dave Valentine, who owns Arizona Auto Repair. He's west of Stapley on McKellips. One of his customer writes in, tell people that he's about a half a mile west of Stapley. Dave's shop is down the hill west of Horn, better than a half a mile west of Stapley. The reason why is there's another shop between Stapley and Dave's, and Dave's is much better. This is kind of nice. So if you're looking for Dave's Arizona Auto Repair, half a mile west of Stapley on McKellips on the south side of the road, but look for Arizona Auto Repair. And Kevin, thank you. That was really nice of you to say that, and it's also nice because my wife bought me a new iPhone, and I can check my email now. Not that I ever wanted to, believe me. All righty, Vicki, you're up next. Vic, how are you today?
I'm grateful to be able to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I have a 97 Cherokee with the 4-liter engine, automatic, and four-wheel drive, and I tow a horse trailer with it that's 2,200 pounds. My horses weigh about 800 pounds each, and I carry two of them, and I bought a weight distribution hitch for it. I got no complaints about anything, but I wonder, because for the last 5 or 6 years, I've always put half premium in with the regular that I usually run if I'm going to be pulling the horse trailer. And it occurred to me a couple weeks ago that I may be just throwing money away. Or do you think it's useful to use a higher octane when you're pulling a horse trailer?
The only reason I would say that that's a good idea is if you said to me, Mark, when I'm going up a hill loaded up with the horses, it pings on me, it rattles on me, and if I mix it with premium, it doesn't do that. That's the only reason you need to do that.
Oh, thank you. In 16 years of driving it, I've never heard it ping, but we never haul them outside, you know, outside, say, an hour from the city limits. We don't go up to Prescott or anything.
Okay. No, in that case, you're just sticking here in the valley and you're going up to Fountain Hills, maybe riding out of Dynamite riding or River riding, then no, don't do that. I want to ask you a question, though. In your owner's manual, you'll have to look under trailer and towing. There's a acronym called GCWR. That's gross combined weight rating. That GCWR. Now, the thing that's going to change is the second letter. GVWR is gross vehicle weight. That's the Jeep. G George Charlie C is combined. That's Jeep loaded up, trailer loaded up, and the combined weight cannot exceed that number. Okay? And then
The number that I got from the manual was 5,000 pounds, and the horses and the trailer together are barely 4,000.
But here's the deal. The combined weight, you have to add the Cherokee in with two people in it and the saddles or in the trailer, and the combined weight. Now, vehicle weight is different. So I want you to look for the GCWR and it's clear that you've got 22, you've got 3,800, call it 4,000 pounds on the trailer. And then we have to add the Jeep to it and the people in the Jeep to it. And if your gross combined weight is 5,000 or 4,000, then you're way out of spec. But I think what you're looking at is you're looking at the trailer capability of 4,000. That's not even important. The whole rig has to be weighed and cannot exceed the gross combined weight. And the reason I bring this up is I can't tell you how many accidents that I've been involved in, I've been investigating. A lady and her husband are driving a truck westbound on the 40 in Kingman. They lose control and lots of people die. And we find out that the truck and trailer are like 6,000 pounds overweight. And that means that the insurance company for the lady and the man are more than likely to pay out lots and lots of money because they were running down the road illegally. And if you have any problem at all, I want you to email me, and I'll take a picture of some of the information I need, and you and I will work it out. But the gross combined weight is the most important weight. And all you have to do is pull into Love's, get on the scale, push the button, tell the lady to give you a weight. That's you. You're on the scale with your truck. You're on the scale with the horse trailer. They're loaded up, and it costs you $8. And
wow.
With that piece of paper, you'll know exactly what the whole rig weighs.
Would I do that?
At Love's or any of the truck stops.
Oh, okay. I can do that.
Because they all have a scale, and you go in and say, I'm going to use this scale. Would you give me a gross weight for all of everything on the scale? She says, yeah. You pull over, and then pretty soon she says, okay, pull off. And you pull off, and then you go in and get your scale weight and give her $8 or whatever it costs.
Then the weight distribution hitch I put $400 into buying a couple months ago doesn't help with anything?
No, let me explain what that does. That's an interesting concept. When you put is your horse trailer two axles?
No, yes.
Okay. When you put the trailers in, and it's probably a two-horse side-by-side or two-horse slant?
Slant.
Okay. Most of the weight's on the front axle. So if we put the hitch on the bumper of your Cherokee, then the back of the bumper of the Cherokee is going to go down and the front of the trailer is going to go down. So we have this V. We're going to use a weight distribution hitch to bring that connection level. That's why you got to load those bars with the chains.
Yeah.
You're actually lifting it back up. So you know how to find out if your weight distribution hitch is exactly perfect?
I took it to the U-Haul where the manager that installed it pointed out to me how to show that it's on. The bars are level.
No.
No.
No. Here's what you do. You take a tape measure to the Jeep Cherokee, and you mark a mark on the rear bumper somewhere. I don't care where it's at. Let's say you mark the bumper at 20 inches. Okay? Load
okay.
The horse trailer up and hook your bars up and your chains up like you think. And if you're not 20 after you're done, it's not installed right. It's not
wow.
Adjusted right. It's not. We want to put the headlights of your Jeep Cherokee back where they were. So if the Cherokee unhitched is 20 inches off the ground, when we put the tongue on it, it's going to drop it down to 18, 16, 14. But then when we load those bars, we want to bring that mark back up to 20. Now the Jeep Cherokee is perfectly level the way it was designed. The trailer's perfectly level, and that's the best handling you're going to get. It has nothing to do with level bars.
Wow.
So just take the measurement before and after. You back the Jeep up, take the measurement, hook up your trailer, the horses are loaded up, all your boyfriend or husband's beers loaded up, and then take your measurement, okay?
Thank you so much. You've been a great deal of help this
all
morning.
Right. Anytime. I know lots about trailers, and I love to talk horses. So.
Oh, nice. We have Peruvian Fossils and Mustangs. What do you have?
I got all paints. I have a black and white paint who's the sire of a three-colored paint. And the three-colored...
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
and
my
then,
favorite.
And then the three-color paint, is and then I have a brand new little stud colt. And the little stud colt is, the mare is a Doc Oaks, and the stud is a Doc Alina Doc Bar. And I don't even care about that. All I want him to do is just work cattle. That's all I want. So I just bought four Holstein calves. And I'm going to put the four Holstein calves in the pen as soon as they get a little bigger in the pasture. And originally, as a stud, they'll overrun him. But as he grows bigger and bigger, then when I see him in the morning and he's got all the cows penned up to one corner of the place and he has been the master, then that horse is mine.
That's a great idea.
And you know what? It's so much fun to watch them chase him, and then he turns around and says, "You know what? I don't have to have them." He says, "I'm not the prey. I'm the predator." And his name is Three Doc. We called him Three Doc. He's a little black and white Tobiano, but he's my dream now. I just castrated gelded is the right word. I just gelded the two paints so that I could ride them, because I'm going to go on that Hash Knife ride next year where they read the mail from Holbrook to Scottsdale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if your horses can run somewhere around a six-minute mile, which is no problem, I mean, you can do a gentle lope and do six a mile, you should consider.
I would love to ride my Paso's. Then there's no balancing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you'd be great. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had some greenhorns that their butts, you could see half the countryside as their butts bounced off of the saddles. But then we had some other guys that knew how to put the feet up front and all that kind of stuff. It was a great time, and they shut off all the liquor, which even made it better as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
But to run a mile and hand off and then load in your trailer and then go 10 miles ahead and then run again, that's fun. That's fun.
Nice.
All right. Thank you, Vicki. Frank?
Thank you.
You're up, Frank. What can we do for you?
Is there anything you put in the transmission? I heard there is something you just add to the transmission, a tablespoon or two or something that helps the transmission.
No, I think what we're talking about, I think you might have heard part of this. Sometimes the seals in a hydraulic component, whether it's a rack and pinion, a power steering pump, or the transmission, sometimes the seals get hard from heat. And we want to return some pliability. We want them to soften up. And brake fluid causes rubber to swell slightly. And it also softens rubbers, because the rubber in the brake master cylinder lasts a whole lot longer than the seals on the transmission. And brake fluid is a hydraulic fluid as well. So if you have some small leaks in your power steering pump, in your rack and pinion, in your steering box, or in your transmission, I'd put a half a pint in. In your steering box and in your power steering, no matter what system you've got, two or three or four tablespoons. All we're trying to do is return some pliability to the seals and soften them up and cause them to grow just a little bit. That'll work half the time. Is that maybe what you were talking about? Okay.
Good idea. I get 60,000 miles on the transmission. Hadn't been changed in about 30,000 miles.
Okay. The first time, did they pull the filter and change 4 quarts of fluid?
I think so, yeah.
Then the next time, may I make a suggestion?
Yes.
It's time to flush it.
Okay.
So we leave the filter in there because we got all the metal out of the first 30.
Yes.
And at 60,000, you're going to say, hey, I want you to disconnect the cooler lines. I want you to hook up your flush machine. Uh-huh. And they're going to use between 12 and 20 quarts. And this machine will feed it in one way and bring it out the other. And as soon as the brown and the black ends up being cherry red, you shut the machine off, you top it off, and you're done. And we've changed the pump, the converter, the entire transmission has new fluid in it. And the cost is about the same as a filter. But my suggestion is you should do those every other time. So the third time you do the filter, the fourth time you do a flush. That's what I do.
Well, it's all red now. It's never changed color.
If it smells good,
yeah,
and it's nice
two
and red,
minutes,
then why are you going to change it?
Okay.
All right.
Caller,
okay,
Christopher,
you.
If you need him.
Okay, thank you. Christopher, we got to be quick, but go ahead.
Four-wheel drive F-150-07. I'm wondering, with 86,000 miles, almost 90% of it is highway, no symptoms. But does it make any sense to spend the money to get the injector cleaner, the three-stage thing, or throttle body cleaner? Clean.
If you don't have any symptoms, if you say to the shop, what symptoms are you going to fix with your suggested $195 worth of upper intake cleaning? I'm going to answer your question this way. Every day in my life, I get a magazine and it says, Mark, if you buy this machine, and if you only sell three a day, you're going to add $52,000 to your bottom line at the end of the year. Mark, you've got to buy this machine. And it's really easy to sell, and we're going to sell you the chemicals because we're the only ones that can sell you the chemicals. And we're going to service your machine. But, Mark, you're going to make a lot of money.
1 minute.
The problem is what the heck are we fixing? What symptom do we have? You look them in the eye and you say, oh, well, what symptom are you going to fix? What have I got? And they're going to go, well, do you have a hesitation? No, 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 no. You know what I have. What, you bid it. There is 25 different symptoms, but if you don't have any problem, you're just putting money in their pocket for nothing. I don't even own one of those machines. I feel that strongly about them. So that's my answer, Christopher. Anybody else? 602? No, no, no. We're done with the show. Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a question or a comment, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Between now and then, please wear your seatbelt for me. I'm telling you, you have a much better chance of surviving in a car crash if you're belted in than if you don't have your belt on. And forget about all that about fire, okay? It never happens. Everybody talks about it, but it never happens. Just wear your seatbelt. Don't drink and drive. I'll see you next Saturday. God bless you. 10 to noon next Saturday.